I will then turn to social media enhanced crimes and really give you an overview of how social media are used to commit crimes, but also those crimes that are really specific to social media and where social media has resulted in really new crimes, or at least in that the crimes you know in the physical world are just not the same as in the online world. And let me first start with how social media are used in crime. First, they are used to communicate, and that is one element that we already discussed, which is that in particular, encrypted social media will be used to communicate with other criminals, so to organize crime, but also to contact potential victims. And because of the encryption, that also means that it is very difficult to actually see what is happening. In the last years, we have seen the rise of so-called crypto phones. So telephones, smartphones that are fully encrypted. I'm thinking of the Sky investigations, the EncroChat investigations, and there are several others. However, what we're seeing at the moment is because of these investigations that most criminals do believe that they are even more vulnerable because of those crypto phones or these encrypted smartphones, because then it is quite clear that an investigation will target on everyone who has this kind of smartphones. And so we see a shift again of criminals simply using the general social media communication applications that are used also by other people, because in that perspective, they're less targeted when they use this kind of social media. And the most used are in that case, Telegram and also Signal. And we of course know that Telegram and Signal are also used for non-criminal activities. And for that reason, of course, it will become much more difficult to distinguish on the one hand, illicit use of these tools on the one hand by criminals and the legitimate use by the general public. And so we do know already as social media are being used for that communication. And as I mentioned, they're also used to contact potential victims. And we see this in particular in those cases of of phishing and other economic and financial cybercrime, where victims will get a message. And one of these particular forms that is very well known is the WhatsApp fraud, where that a criminal will contact a person via WhatsApp, stating that they are the mother, the sister, the brother, the grandfather who needs money very urgently, and that they are contacting them with another number, with another account via WhatsApp, because they have lost their phone or their phone is broken. And so they are using this kind of medium. And what we will often see if we investigate is of course that they used spoofed telephone numbers in order to avoid that we would find out who the real person is behind that kind of communication. And that is also, of course, what social media does and automation does. It is very easy to contact many people in one time. And so phishers who use social media don't have to stop at one person. They can send these kind of messages to thousands of people and simply see who is reacting. Moreover, it's made much more easier because of translation programs that a cyber criminal from, let's say, Russia can contact and make victims in Belgium because they can use these translation programs that are becoming ever better and ever more smart. And so it is unclear for the other party to see whether they are talking to a real person or a fake person and someone who speaks their language or does not speak their language. In our investigations, we also see that social media are actively used to recruit for criminal activities. One of these activities that we see is where they are really targeting young people or people in vulnerable positions to become money mules. And either that, that contact is quite clear for the victim, that they will be working as a money mule, where they will post this kind of calls on Facebook or on other social media, where we, they call for, do you want to earn some money, quick, easy? The only thing you need to do is provide your bank account. So those are the most obvious ones. But what we see as well is that they will also try to contact people who are completely not aware that they will function as money mules. And we see that in particular in Bitcoin investigations, where there's really now a spike of frauds, where we see that people are being contacted as half-time workers in a company for Bitcoin. And they will become brokers in Bitcoin. They get a labor contract and they are asked simply to provide their bank account, and they should send, they will have the income of investors of Bitcoin, and they should then invest the money from their bank account in several Bitcoins. What they do not know is that the money that is sent to them is money from fraudulent activities, and that they're basically cooperating in money laundering these activities. And we see they're all recruited via LinkedIn or Facebook or other kind of social media. And because of the professional outlook of the social media, because they are also provided with a labor contract, that most of these victims are completely unaware that they're cooperating in a scam. And that is the last part that is connected to that, what social media, what criminals on social media use to convince victims, but also to make sure that they have other persons cooperating with them in their criminal scheme, is to convince that what they are doing or saying or offering is real. And so they will create on social media several profiles, for example, that will like a product that's a scam. And if you would order that product, you will never see your money or the services that they advertised for. But because of social media, you can create so many fake accounts that will all like this kind of product and say that it's a fabulous product, and that the service by its company was really very well, and that the product was delivered within time, while in fact they're all fake accounts. And we see that as well in larger schemes of where certain groups try to undermine democracy, where many fake accounts are being created simply to push through a certain message and certain fake information to the general public and undermine really the confidence in the real information of authorities, and to create a kind of atmosphere in society of hate and of disbelief in public authorities. And that brings me basically into what we see today in the field of crime where social media are being used. And we distinguish three fields of crimes online. First, it is the economic financial crimes. Phishing, ransomware, WhatsApp scams, CEO fraud, whaling, and marketplace fraud. It's really there in those fields that you will see that social media are used to communicate with victims, to recruit money mules, and to recruit other criminals, to look also for potential criminal partners to cooperate, because we really see groups of cyber criminals on social media that will consist of people who do not know each other in the real world, and will also operate from several parts of the world. And they find each other on social media, and also finally to convince victims when they contact victims that they are real genuine persons, then that it is not a scam, while in fact they cooperate via fake social media accounts. Secondly, and that is where I'm going to focus on now, is cyber violence. And this is really a part of cybercrime that is created because of social media, where social media is really central or vital in this type of crime. Cyber harassment, cyber bullying, CSAM and live stream, so the abuse material of minors, online hate speech, NCII, which means the non-consensual dissemination of intimate images, or nudes or for revenge porn, as it is also labeled, doxing and identity theft of scams. But also, which I'm not going to focus, social media are also used in cyber warfare for espionage via fake accounts, but also state-sponsored ransomwares where first contacts are being made via social media, and of course, fake news. That is once again really in the focus as well of the policy of the European Union to tackle fake news and disinformation. So what I'm going to do is talk now about cyber violence. And the Council of Europe already has a working definition of what cyber violence entails. It's the use of computer systems to cause, facilitate or threaten violence against individuals that results in physical, sexual, psychological, or economic harm or suffering, and may include the exploitation of individual circumstances, characteristics, or vulnerabilities. And so what is really crucial in this definition is, of course, the digital element, the use of computer systems, and also that it really targets individuals. The purpose is really to cause harm to an individual, where in this economic, financial, cybercrime phenomena, the purpose is really to get out money or to get out other assets. Here, the individual is a target, not so much the economic benefits. It may be a part, of course, of cyber violence, but it's not the main target. There are several, the European Union is also now focusing on cyber violence and is ever more taking new measures and drafting new norms to tackle cyber violence within the European Union. There are two reasons for that evolution. On the one hand, of course, because in cyber violence, in cyberspace, cyber violence does not stop at the borders. And the trans-border intrinsic characteristic of cyber violence entails that cooperation among member states is a real asset to tackle cyber violence. But also, and I think that's the second reason why cyber violence is this area of crime where the European Union can really make is of added value, is because it also sort of uses data. It uses personal data. Cyber criminals will exploit your personal data for their crime. And as European Union is also a shared space of the protection of personal data in because of the GDPR, that also means that if you want to protect those data against cyber criminals, cooperation at the level of the European Union is logic. So the first focus of the European Union has been on hate speech. And the European Union already has legislation on fighting discrimination and xenophobia and racism. And so it must not surprise that European Commission also wants to tackle hate speech. And as the European Commission is launching now new proposal, they also already mentioned that these hate groups are of particular particularly problematic because they ever more widen their audiences using also social media. There is already a code of conduct that is focused on internet service providers. And we have also seen the tackling of this kind of hate speech context in the area of terrorism. So the terrorism directive has already focused as well on content removal, but has also made it easier for countries to adopt legislation that criminalizes hate speech in the area of terrorism and the recruiting as well via social media of potential insurgents in the area of terrorism. Very recently, the European Union has also adopted a roadmap to extend the list of EU crimes to hate speech and hate crime. This will be done on the basis of Article 83 of the Treaty of the Functioning of the European Union that enables that EU crimes are also being tackled. And so this is really the starting point for the European Commission to draft a full proposal of directive on hate speech. This will be a bumpy road because already simply by the announcing of the roadmap, there has been some protest of NGOs and of NGOs and also of ISPs that by legislating hate speech, this might also be very problematic for the freedom of expression and information. Because in some parts of the world and in some countries, criminalization of hate speech and hate crime has also been abused to limit freedom of expression and freedom of information. And so it's very difficult to balance. In addition, the Council of Europe has already agreed on a recommendation on hate speech that has been pivotal in several member states to include hate speech legislation in their own jurisdiction. And as I mentioned, the difficult part in legislating hate speech is, of course, because you always need to balance with freedom of expression and freedom of information, which is protected in both the EU Charter of Fundamental Rights. And of course, there is a lot of jurisprudence of the European Court of Human Rights on this balance. And the European Court of Human Rights, as is very well known, will only allow for limitations to the freedom of expression when it is necessary in a democratic society. And the court has always held that in a democratic society, pluralism and diversity implies that there should always be a broad tolerance for opinions, also for those that might shock or disturb. And so that any limitation as to the freedom of speech and information should be narrowly defined. However, in recent years, and in particular also because of the rise of social media and hate speech on social media, the European Court of Human Rights has also allowed for more restrictions to the dissemination of hate speech via social media and online. And one of the cases where it was very clear that the court was also promoting a strong democratic rule of law society that could not be undermined by hate speech was the case Mbala Mbala, which was not an online case, but was still very instructive, where it was a comedian that would include a lot of anti-Semitism in his shows. And also had a kind of movement that resembled the Nazi greeting, the Kennel, as it was called, where he was sanctioned for hate crime by the French courts. And the European Court of Human Rights, when his case came to Strasbourg, mentioned that the convention and freedom of expression cannot be abused. Basing itself on Article 17 of the Convention, cannot be abused to limit the freedom, cannot be abused to limit the rights and the protection of vulnerable persons and to incite discrimination. And so that one cannot rely on the freedom of expression when targeting other groups and other minorities in society via hate speech. And we really see this now coming ever more in cases before the European Court of Human Rights and also European Court of Justice, where it is questioned to what extent this kind of content is can be criminalized online. The main takeaway from that case law is on the one hand that for the internet service providers, their responsibility is so-called notice and takedown. basically that if they are notified that there is criminal content and so hate speech on their social media, that they should take that down. But also as a person, as an individual, you can be responsible for hate speech on your own social media. For example, in the case of Sanchez via France, this was a personal wall of a politician. A politician that allowed for several remarks or many posts on his personal wall in the run-up of elections for mayor in his town, where he also stood for becoming the mayor, where there were a lot of posts that were clearly inciting hatred against certain ethnic and religious groups. It was a public wall. Where in the end, Mr. Sanchez was being prosecuted because he had tolerated this kind of hate speech on his wall. Moreover, when he was notified that there was clear incitement to hatred on his personal Facebook wall, he did not remove those comments. He did not block any of the posters. And he mentioned as well that, I mean, it's a free society and everyone can express his or her opinions freely. And in the end, the European Court of Human Rights concluded that this prosecution of Mr. Sanchez was not contrary to the freedom of expression, because there is a certain responsibility for you to monitor your public wall, in particular, if you know it has a broad reach and that many will look at your wall. And if you're a public figure and a political figure, and in and also the nature of comments is clearly inciting hatred, then you should also take some responsibility, and it is not contrary to the freedom of expression that you would be sanctioned for such content on your own wall, even if you have not posted it yourself. Of course, this case is much debated and criticized as well, as it clearly limits as well freedom of expression, but it shows that the Strasbourg court is willing to take it a step ahead. Apart from hate speech, the focus is now much more put on cyber violence that has a certain gendered element, where women and girls are very often the victims. And these are, there was a global survey by Plan International on cyber violence against girls with quite terrifying results. Not only did many girls highlight that they had become victim of cyber violence online, such as hate speech on the basis of their gender, harassment, bullying, or the dissemination of their pictures, but one in five who was subjected to cyber violence reduced their use on social media. Or they mentioned as well that they changed their opinion. So it has a direct impact, cyber violence, and direct impact how women and girls will interact online. A third of women in a UK study reported that there has been online stalking by a partner or an ex. So it is very clear that gender violence is a major problem currently online. And the European Court of Human Rights, in two cases against Russia, the Volodina cases, already mentioned that and accepted that cyber violence is a violation of the convention, that it can result, in addition to physical violence, to degrading treatment, and that cyber violence in itself constitutes a violation of the protection of integrity and privacy as protected by Article 8 of the Convention. And that there is a positive obligation on states to provide of an effective remedy, investigate this kind of crimes, and take measures. Cooperation among member states on these kinds of crimes are still limited, mostly because many countries still do not provide of specific incriminations on cyber violence. And not all of the classical incriminations concerning harassment will apply to these kind of online manifestations of gendered violence. Moreover, the Budapest Convention, which is really our basis of cooperation in cybercrime, does not provide of these crimes. You could potentially use hacking if there's a dissemination of nude pictures of a woman after they were hacked out of her computer, or certain offenses on copyright you might use as well. For example, if an image of a certain person is disseminated via social media for harassment or stalking, but still cooperation is limited. And that is also the reason why the Council of Europe has taken further action with the Istanbul Convention. The Istanbul Convention is a convention that is focused on combating violence against women and domestic violence. And recently it has adopted a first recommendation, but of course that's soft law, focused on the digital dimension of violence against women. That includes the obligation on states to enact legislation tackling cyber violence, including cyber stalking, cyber harassment, hate speech, and the dissemination of nude pictures and sexual exploitation online. But also the European Union is currently has taken an initiative. It has launched a proposal directive on combating violence against women and domestic violence on International Women's Day 2022. So that's a very recent initiative where also these kind of crimes that were included in the recommendation of the Istanbul Convention would now also be included in a directive. This directive focuses on the non-consensual distribution of intimate images, so what is many times mentioned as revenge porn, but also the manipulation of those images, because we see that ever more deepfake is being used for undressing women and then disseminating these pictures as if they were real pictures of these women. And this technique is called deep news. But also cyber harassment and cyber stalking and the use of devices to track women online via their social media are included in this proposal, as well as gendered hate speech. And this proposal recognizes the particular impact of social media on gender-related violence. While this proposal focuses on, or the title already mentions, violence against women, and from our research as well, we can see that women are targeted more than men, and also that when they're targeted, the impact on women is much more substantial than on men. The provisions itself are not gendered, in the sense that these crimes will also apply when men will become victim. And probably that's the main critique that you can give on this proposal, is that we know from our research that also men, and in particular young men, do become victim of this type of cyber crimes. And so that probably the title of this proposal, however, the reason for the title can be very much be substantiated as well by the numbers of victims, that it probably is better to have a general directive on cyber violence against women, men, and of course, other vulnerable groups that are specifically targeted because of their sexual orientation or their religion or minority, that are also targeted with abusing social media. And finally, there's the crime of doxing, which basically means that you will outperson, expose people online for certain actions. For example, when a nude picture is disseminated online, that the personal details of this person are mentioned. But the same if there is an article in a newspaper of someone being prosecuted for certain crimes, and someone who will appear before the court, that someone will put online the address of this person and of the family members which can result as well in harassment. This is already tackled by the European Union via the General Privacy Regulation, General Data Protection Regulation. You could say, does this apply? Because this is personal use and that is excluded in the GDPR. But the European Court of Justice already mentioned or already decided that if data are personal data are processed online in a public sphere, in public online space, that the GDPR applies as well to individuals processing personal data. And of course, and I will be very short on this, there is also already European legislation and international cooperation on the sexual abuse of online sexual abuse of minors. And child abuse material is already tackled with the directive of the EU on combating sexual abuse and sexual exploitation of children and child abuse material. You also have the Budapest Convention and Lanzarote Convention that make it much more easier to cooperate in between states to tackle child abuse material. And finally, there's of course the International Child Sexual Exploitation Database of Interpol, where these images, where we know that they have been posted via social media, are already stored in the database also to identify potential victims.